If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month, with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.
Welcome to this episode of YPAL's Tales from the Superyacht Laundry. I am joined today by the gorgeous Lauren from UKSA. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm super excited to chat with you and obviously discuss what we've got coming up in the next few months.
I'm sure it's going to be very interesting. We've been working on a little bit of a side project as well, which we can announce in this podcast. But yeah, no, I've known of UKSA. Everybody knows of UKSA.
You'd hope so.
You know, I've never been here. And for dear listeners, I've literally had the journey from hell trying to get here. It probably would have been easier for me to get to Outer Mongolia probably. Or something. I ended up just... Anyway, I'm here. We've pressed record. Hopefully this is recording.
Yes.
But the way the morning's gone, I don't know. But anyway, I wanted to speak to you because we were talking about, we've literally just been talking about how the yachting industry is a little bit like the Eagles song, Hotel California. And I mean this as in you can check out whatever time you want, but you can never leave. But I think your story is really interesting because you just thought that you would never get dragged into this industry and you have. So before we get started, give us a bit of a background of what were you, before the sailing or sea came into your life, what were you doing?
So I always grew up around UKSA because my dad was a yacht master instructor here. So I had my second birthday in our coffee shop.
Did you?
And I did my swimming lessons here. I learned to windsurf here, but growing up, I had no real interest in the maritime industry, going on the water. Like, I enjoyed it, but it was just never for me. I was super focused on going to university. I studied fashion styling, and I did complete my degree whilst I was working here. But yeah, I just had no real interest and no real knowledge about the industry. It is one of those, we all say it's one of those industries that you don't know about it until you're sucked into it. And then
I'm surprised it took you that long, considering that your dad was like here all the time and you were here all the time. You were just like, no, I'm not interested.
Yeah. I think we had so many crews that we'd have dinner with, and all I knew was that he taught sailing and that was the extent of it. I had no idea what a super yacht was. I didn't understand any of the qualifications or what it meant. I just knew that my dad went off and taught people how to sail. So it's funny that now I'm actually supporting his old students through the Officer of the Watch process and even beyond, and actually helping them with recruitment. So it's a really nice and special kind of way to connect with my dad as well.
Is living on an island, like, so UKSA, for those of you who are listening, is on the Isle of Wight. Hence why I had a bit of a mare getting here this morning. Anyway, is it a bit of a bubble? Like, even a bubble within a bubble, because obviously you're here, you're surrounded by sailing all the time, and literally, or were you just a stubborn child and like, I don't want to be involved with it?
Yeah, I think my whole family grew up around sailing. My dad and his brother, well, one of his brothers were in the Royal Navy. My dad was in the South African Defence Force. He was a radar instructor. He then had his own sailing school with my mum. My uncle sails. It's just a big family thing, but I don't know. I think because we didn't have our own boat, I never got to be a big part of it. We went power boating and stuff when I was little, but that was kind of the extent and as far as it got. Obviously, living on an island, it's definitely a bubble. There's people that have literally never left.
Never actually left the island. You are joking.
It's insane. Yeah.
Considering they've never got the ferry off.
To Southampton even. Yeah, it's wild.
I don't believe you.
Yeah.
But, Why? Why would you not leave ever?
I mean, it's a great place to live and grow up. And we say it's kind of one of the best places for kids to grow up and also to retire. It's just such an amazing island. And I love living here. And I think that's what's kept me here as well. I lived in Southampton for a few months while I was at university. But I wanted to be home.
No offence to Southampton, but my experience today, I wouldn't want to live in Southampton. It's just too hard to get across the city,
yeah,
to be honest. But it is, I mean, I was actually telling the taxi driver on the way here. I've been here twice now. Although I've lived on the South Coast for ages, my husband never brought me, and I came last summer with my parents. It is a fab island. Like, yeah. There's so much.
Yeah, I think there's so many hidden treasures on the island and places you can go and things you can see. But obviously, the sea is such a big part of that. We're surrounded by it. It's one of the busiest shipping channels in the world, some of the highest tidal ranges. Like, that's why people come to train with us. And I think that's what's kept me here, is just the excitement of new people every week, well, every day almost. And a continuous change of students, new people to meet, but then also the returning students as well that you build those connections with. So
when did this slippery slope start? You know, when you were like, oh, I'm going to do fashion, and then you ended up in the office?
Well, I started in our coffee shop when it was a bar 8.5 years ago, just part-time while I was at uni, trying to earn some money. And obviously just started meeting crew, asking questions, starting to get a bit of an understanding of the industry. And then I was asked to cover some shifts on reception just to help out, which I said yes to for the extra money. And then I actually applied for a permanent position in reception, which was just part-time, but it suited me well and I wanted to be working here, and I didn't get it. And I sobbed. I was so gutted. I was like, but I love working here. So I took a few weeks off because I was like actually traveling to go see my sister, and then came back and was offered the chance to invigilate the officer's exams and the master's exams. So I was like, of course, like I want to do anything I can to be working here. Carried on doing the odd shift in the coffee shop, at the bar and reception. And again, just fell in love with it. And I was like, I want to be here. Like, I love the environment. I love meeting the people and hearing about it. And like, it was just such a cool thing to be part of. And within 6 months, there was actually an opportunity to take over running the MCA exams here at UKSA. So I said I'd only do it if I could have a permanent position. And I was looking for full time because I was coming towards the end of my degree. And I was like, I can focus on the work and also get my degree done like in my spare time almost, because it was where it was a practical course. I could get a lot of the post-production and editing done in my spare time. So I was determined that I was going to get in. So I ended up helping with certification, working with that kind of like all of the admin team behind the scenes, like actually dealing with the students and understanding what the different courses were and what it meant and all the acronyms that we get used to now. And then I think it was 4 years ago now, I was asked to help with someone's CV for the first time. And I'd seen people doing it and had a bit of an understanding of creative CVs because of my university course. We had to do it for our course. So I offered to help and managed to kind of get a job coming in actually through a connection that I'd made at UKSA. And he got the job in a week, flew out to an 80 plus meter vessel that still recruits through us. Wow. So I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, there's this other side of it as well that I had no idea about. And like the recruitment and how do people actually get jobs on super yachts? It was just like a completely alien concept to me. And then as we again had a bit of a reshuffle in 2022, our MCA manager and cadetship manager role was actually combined. So they thought it was good to have me working underneath James, our MCA manager, working together on the cadetship, so that there was someone supporting them from day one all the way to OOW, and then through that MCA training and actually having that team that really understood it. So we worked really well together for that first cadetship. I had 37 students that I mentored. The success rate of them has been fantastic. And some of them are going to be finishing their OOW modules this year, which is scary, but also super exciting to know that they're actually completing. And then over the last few years, the course has just boomed. Like, we've had an intake of 55 students this week, which again is like terrifying, but also I could not be more thrilled and excited to work with them.
What would you say you like most about the cadets? Like, is it, you know, they're just interesting, all different walks of life, or are they fit? Like, what? It'll be funny, but you're really young. It's like first officers coming through the door. I'll be like, all of them.
Yeah. Can't deny it. My manager's going to be like, Lauren, what are you doing? In terms of the cadetship, they're 18 to 25 years old. The drive and the determination that these 18-year-olds have, I've never seen it anywhere else. And it just impresses me so much. And I think because I'm so ambitious and like I've just continued to want to grow in my role over the last few years and take on any challenge, seeing young people with that same determination that I have, I just love being around it. And
if you can compare, because you went to uni, if you can compare the drive and determination of somebody doing a uni course to a cadet.
Completely different. Like, obviously, uni, you're there, you want to pass the course, you're there to get a degree, but this is just something else. They know how competitive the industry is. And I'm not saying other industries aren't, like fashion was competitive and maybe not the nicest people all the time to be around, quite challenging as a female especially, but especially the superyacht sector, there's so many jobs and there's so many boats, but actually trying to get your foot in the door and prove yourself to start with, it's so hard. But yeah, the cadets and the standard of our students on the cadetship is so different, and you can really tell when someone's been a cadet versus when someone's maybe just done their STCW, because it's that industry preparation that we support them with, and actually introducing them to professionals in the industry while they're here, ex-cadets coming back and mentoring, actually just being part of the community.
Wealth of knowledge to start with.
And they're here for 5 months, like solidly, minus the Christmas break. We actually let them go home for a week.
That's very kind of you.
Yeah. Sure. We're like, we need a break too. They're here solidly for 5 months learning, and it's intense. It's not Monday to Friday. It's 7 days a week, sometimes 14 days straight of CFAs, classroom, CVs, recruitment, industry sessions in an evening, revision on weather and tides and passage planning. And then you've got to fit in yourself and looking after yourself and encouraging them to actually do some like fitness and getting ready to how are you going to maintain your fitness on board a vessel.
So it's, you know, it's like a mini trial for a vessel.
Literally getting them ready to step on a yacht. And we tell them we're not sending you out. You're not going to be the best. But you have an understanding that others don't, because you've had that guidance and support for all this time, and that continues while you're out in the industry. It doesn't just stop when you leave UKSA. And I think that's what makes us really special as a company and an organisation, is that our career service is for life. So we have people that have maybe been in the industry 10, 20 years, and they still access the support of our careers team. And it might be that they want to come back shore-based and they're not sure what to do, or they know what to do, but they need the connections and the introductions to the companies, or they're hiring people and want to advertise a role through us. It could be anything, and it might just be CV updates and making sure that their resume is up to date and reflecting them in the best way possible, because things have changed with that.
So can you tell whether a cadet's going to make it or not?
Definitely. And I think...
Is it not? Because obviously you are signing up for a course and obviously a degree, they'll probably try and push you through. But yeah, I don't know whether, you know, obviously you can tell me whether it's a good idea to force your way into something if it's just not.
So with our cadetship program, we actually have a interview process over 2 days. So obviously we want to make sure that the people we're getting onto the course are the right people at the right time. We don't want people to sign up to this if we don't think they're ready. And we don't think they've got an understanding of just working like a 9-to-5, let alone the industry standards of a yacht. So we do try to, that's why the selection process is such a big part of the cadetship, and actually making sure we've got the right people in the course and that we're putting the right people forward for funding and the support. And some of them are doing a foundation degree alongside it. So again, it's that additional commitment and time that they're going to have to spend doing extra coursework while they're here at UKSA. So we do try to make sure that by the time they've actually joined UKSA and they're on the cadetship, that they're ready. There might be instances where students maybe still need to gain a bit further experience when they graduate, whether that's on flotilla and charter yachts before they step onto super yachts. It could be that they just need a bit more time at home and like save up a bit and
maybe start doing your own laundry.
Yeah. I mean, we do encourage them to do that while they're here. So that is something that it's all inclusive on site. So they live on site, they eat on site, they do their laundry on site. I get them ironing their shirts for graduation, understanding how the interior of a vessel works. And it's not just a, you're a deckhand, this is a stewardess, separate teams. It's everyone's going to have to work together. You need to understand that they're not there to be your stews. They are part of your team and you work together. So it is just that level of understanding that they have when they leave UKSA, that they don't know everything, but they know enough to get started and do well and perform well. Okay.
Obviously, you know, bit by bit coming into UKSA, what does it mean to you? Like, because obviously your father works here, your mum works here. It's a bit of a, you know, a family vibe. Do you have more to talk to them probably at dinner?
Yeah, I think now that I actually understand what my dad did as a... I, just so engrossed by it, and I've got so many questions, and even just little things like understanding what a collision regulation is. It's just nice to have that connection with my dad. And my mum coming in, she actually invigilates the officers and master's exams, because when I took over that role of actually coordinating them, I had to replace myself almost straight away. So I was like, mum, do you want a part-time job? So I literally trained her up at home, got her ready to come and take over from me, essentially, and have built up the team since from there. We already had one other person, but now we've got a bigger team of invigilators. My colleague's taken over that responsibility from me, actually, in the last year, because my role's expanded as well. But yeah, just having that family connection here is really special. And
it's not like a surprise, though, because, you know, the Isle of Wight, you know, in winter, you know, like all like holiday destinations, you get stripped back to the real people live here.
Yeah.
So the whole island's got a family vibe.
Definitely.
Anyway, they're all kind of...
Yeah, we're a real community. All the kind of locals and cows know each other and know UKSA and know the staff. And I think it's nice that we've got that connection with the town, because where our students stay with us residentially, some of them for months at a time, it means that they then become part of that community too. And when they come back and do further training, the restaurants and the pubs recognize them, and they understand it's just a big part of that yachting community in Cowes. It's obviously one of the biggest yachting hubs.
Well, it's also like, obviously, for people that don't know, they do racing around the island. I think one of the, like, I haven't spoken to a sailor, but I will eventually speak to one, why it's so attractive for sailors and competitions here, because it's very small, it's quite close. But from sailing perspective, it's actually quite safe as well, because the Coast Guard can get to you quite quickly.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
But also really challenging environment to learn to sail.
Yeah, it's one of the best training environments in the world, I'd say. We have companies that send their crew over from the Caribbean, the BVIs, to come train with us because of the tidal conditions. We've got some of the biggest tidal ranges in the world. It's one of the busiest shipping channels. So you've got all the
currents
to navigate
as well.
Yeah, it's... there's so much to work around and learn. And I think that's why it makes it such a great place to learn, because all of the different environments, the things that can happen. I mean, today, UK weather, we've had bright sunshine this morning, torrential rain. It's now cloudy, looking like the sun might come out again. So it's how do you prepare for that?
And it's really windy out there as well. I mean, I've been to the island a couple of times. Well, you know, anybody know Patrick Mafflin from Marine Accounts? He decided we were going to do some promotional educational videos, and he decided to take me out on his boat and do it whilst he was sailing. And then we were in the middle, we were like coming towards the island, and the boat just lost power, and he was just like so chilled. I'm like, is a tanker coming? Do we want to worry about the fact we've got no power? And he was like, should we just stop recording this educational finance chat?
Maybe focus on...
Sailors are different.
Yeah.
They're just a different breed of human being.
And I think that's why we do the Yachtmaster sail at UKSA, is because of that understanding of all these different elements that maybe you don't get during the power. And I think that's why our students do so well in the industry, is because they've got that additional knowledge that transfers across both power and sail. I'd say it's a really good split of students that come wanting to work on either motor yachts versus sailing yachts. It's great that there is such a passion in young sailors still, and people that really want to get into that side of the industry and join the race circuit or join like giant mega sailing yachts. So
they are mega as well. The sailing yachts are enormous. I don't know whether you can class it really as a sailing yacht when it's that big.
No, I think beyond like 50, 60 meters.
It's not.
Yeah.
It has sails. It's not really.
I think, like, even though I've never worked on board myself, I love going on board the sailing vessels. I think it just feels homey to me. But I think that's because I've obviously been on board yachts with my dad, like, and seen him on board. But I think there's just something so nostalgic about the feel of like a wooden sailing
yacht. She's got the bug, guys. Look at her face, she's going all dewy eyed. All you need now is a nice sailor and you'll be all right.
If you could hook me up.
Although you're saying that, the image of a nice sailor and what they actually look like on a daily basis generally don't match. Some of them might.
There's definitely a difference in sailing yachties versus
I completely agree with that 100%. I was a motor person.
Yeah.
And I would definitely run it. So going into, obviously, you know, the day-to-day stuff, and obviously with our podcast, we talk about ladies. Obviously, since you've been working here, is it expanding the female cohort?
Definitely. So since I've been seeing the cadets come through over the last 8 years, the first cadetship I saw, there was 2 females. There's now 8 or 9 each year. So wow. Although it's still a small number in comparison to the males on the course, it is growing and it's consistently growing. And even on our shorter courses, so our like 3-week deckhand course, the split of male to females is sometimes equal, which is fantastic. So there's so many more girls actually inspired to go on deck and understanding that it's something that they can do too. But equally, we've also got our interior programs, which are booking up, they're full every time. So wanting to go do the hospitality modules and learn floristry, but also the standards of a super yacht. So I think it's great to see so many females coming through and then having female officers return as well and being able to kind of motivate and inspire the next generation and know that there is progression on board for females as well, because we see a lot of jobs in the industry that are male only due to cabin arrangements. And it's not that they wouldn't have a female on board, but there's just no opportunity for them. So that is still a big barrier, I think. But hopefully it's one that we'll start overcoming more and more.
I think it's one of those things like, is there a barrier? You know, at the end of the day, I think we're at a really good place. If you want to do deck, you can.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only thing, you know, in a society that you can do. You can't force women to do it. I mean, I tried and I don't want to.
Yeah.
Considering that most of the fenders were about the same size as me, I was pretty much as useful as a chocolate teapot on deck. So, you know, at least there's the option. If a woman wants to, they can. But you don't need to, you know, I think that's one of the things about what's going on in the world is like recognizing, yeah, it'd be great that all women, if they want to, get the opportunity. But it doesn't mean that they, you know, all of them want to. Yeah.
But I actually was speaking to a chief officer here at the moment that I've known for a few years, and he was asking how many females were going to be on the cadetship this year. And he was just like, I always try hire female deckhands if I can. And it's funny, I've had like 3 senior males on board tell me this year is that they'd always hire female deckhands because they always work 10 times harder than the boys because they still feel like they have to prove themselves.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably do.
Yeah.
You know. Well, that's nice that obviously their motivation is being recognised by the bridge, let's say. But no, I think it's, even since I was on board, you know, I mean, back in the day, I think a lot of this stuff is kind of relaxed. You know, visible tattoos were like the hex, which is really random considering that a lot of sailors throughout the eons
had
tattoos. Like, no, you can't have one. But why? That's kind of relaxed a little bit. Yeah. I think, you know, there's still probably a little bit you can't have too many.
Yeah, and it definitely depends on the boat, obviously, and what the owner's preferences are. So, but there's always going to be a boat that won't have females on deck or males in the interior. The same as tattoos or piercings or the colour of your hair are still part of it, unfortunately. Colour of your...
Oh, no, wild colours. Yeah, no, I get that.
And also nationality. So there's so many different things that could be a factor that luckily tattoos and being female is only just one small thing now. So it is becoming so much more normal, which is great. And I've noticed it massively, even in just since COVID, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it is looking beautiful out there. I will take some photos and show you guys online, but the sun is coming out. So with regards to, you know, obviously UKSA has existed, we were talking about it's like
coming up to 40 years.
40 years in existence. When it started, what was the ethos?
So we were founded by Noel and Sylvia Lister, and Noel actually used to run MFI, so the old flatback furniture company before IKEA, and that's kind of how he made his money. And he had a huge passion for sailing. Him and his wife absolutely loved it. They circumnavigated the world several times, and they were working with young people and actually had an understanding that it's not just about the sailing skills that you can gain. It was about the skills in communication and teamwork and self-confidence and how that can really change a person. So actually the power of the sea, and we use that term a lot around here at UKSA, is like the power of the sea and how that can change you, and just the influence of how being on the water can really make a difference to someone's life. And that still really feeds through into all the work we're doing now. So all of the young people that we have coming on residential trips from schools, whether that's island schools or minority backgrounds in London and Birmingham and Manchester, kids that have literally never been in the sea.
It was actually really lovely while I was setting up the equipment. There was loads of kids outside, and then all of a sudden you'll hear the teacher's voice going, "Can we get together?" They were all like laughing and giggling outside. It's a real lovely thing.
Yeah, you've got captains walking around doing their master's modules, but you've also got kids pontoon jumping and singing head, shoulders, knees and toes while getting used to being in the sea for the first time. So it's such a amazing place to be working and seeing all these different generations in yachting in one place, because it is that inspirational next step. So yeah, what we were founded on is still very much part of what we do today. That has not changed at all. It's always been about inspiring people and making the sea accessible.
Yeah, I saw actually while I was doing a bit of research, and what they were, an initiative to help children actually that live on the island.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's quite mad. You're on an island surrounded by water and, you know, they're not really being exposed to what's, you know, what's around them. You've got an initiative to help local children.
So we've got our Test the Water programme, which allows every year six child on the island to come for a half day session at UKSA to experience what we can do and how the water could be a career for them if they wanted. And so many of them come back. And,
it's so lovely.
Yeah, it's incredible, like seeing all the different kids every year and actually seeing what a difference it can make, because I do really think that the sea can change your confidence completely. And we've had kids that have never laughed or just been the shyest person in the classroom, and they leave UKSA a completely different person. So just actually seeing that change in a week or just a couple of days is so inspiring.
It is quite, wow, the sea is quite hypnotic.
Yeah.
Isn't it? But then it, and when you're out there, it stops all the noise of the craziness that's going on land.
Yeah, it gives you a chance to switch off. And even though there could be a million things going around you on board, including like the weather changes and the sails going up and trying to deal with something happening below deck, it's, there's still that opportunity to just have the wind on your face and be surrounded by the sea air. It's just, there's something about it that's relaxing, especially to me. I think people leave and they're like, I never want to step on a sailing yacht again.
I do know a couple of ladies in particular, they hated it when they were at sea and they couldn't see land, and I was like, I like that the most.
Yeah,
there was something just about, and obviously the stars not being fun or anything, if you actually on a boat at night, you'll see, I don't know,
it's my favorite.
It's quite spiritual really, the amount of stars, you can see the Milky Way properly.
Yeah.
It's quite incredible and addictive.
Definitely. I think once you're in it, you fall in love with it, and it is almost impossible to leave.
Hotel California.
Very much so.
Hotel California. So with, obviously, you know, you've started a long time ago. When it comes to like the female experiences on board, and obviously the industry is all about a buzz about supporting crew more, what's UKSA's perspective on these things?
So our career service follows our students for life. And over the last year, we've been supported even more so by the Seafarers Charity to ensure that our alumni actually have support on location in some of the world's yachting hubs. So Antibes, Palma, Monaco, we're doing Antigua this year for the first time. So it's a service that follows you through your career. It's accessible. It means that even in 5 years' time or 10, 20 years' time, if you're having a change of thought on what you want to do career-wise, but still want to be in the maritime industry, we can support you through that and make the introductions to companies, the supports there if you just need a familiar face to chat to on location. We did that in Saint-Tropez this year. We actually, me and our welfare and safeguarding manager went to deliver some training in La Ciota on board a couple of vessels, and then went to Saint-Tropez for the day to visit one of our alumni. And he just needed someone to speak to and a familiar face. Like, it can be quite isolating and lonely.
Oh, yards are pretty crap.
Yeah.
You know, you're generally in a yard in a country where, you know, very rarely you can speak the language. The weather is awful. And then they send all the rest of the crew home. They can be quite intense.
It's isolating. You're by yourself. It's, not always the best weather. I mean, when we went, it was 38 degrees and uncomfortably hot. So again, like, it's two opposite ends of the scale, but it is just giving that support to our alumni. But then also we're trying to include other people as well to make sure that all seafarers have that support and really expand our support network in these areas. So hosting more kind of collaborative events. So we've got loads coming up over the next few months, including like a 2-day wellness event, which will include some mental health training, yoga, bracelet making, smoothie bowls. So just like a really nice way for crew to kind of unwind, meet other people in their area and know that there is this support network of people that are there for them no matter where they are.
I think it's quite nice. There's definitely the change in attitude where it's not just get off boat, go to bar.
Yeah.
Well, don't get me wrong.
Love a cocktail.
It's the French water for me. 100%. But it's nice that it's kind of breaking it up.
Yeah.
Because there is, there should be a limit on how much French water you drink.
Yeah.
But it kind of expands it a little bit.
It's giving crew an opportunity to see what else they can do to connect. And I think there's some great initiatives going on in some of the ports where there's female running clubs or people are going and playing pickleball and tennis.
Yossi's Run Wild?
Yes.
That's the one.
It was actually set up by a UKSA graduate.
She's... what was her name?
Karina.
Yeah. Yeah. She's lovely.
Yeah.
So, very shy young lady.
Yeah.
Created something amazing, but what doesn't want to talk about it.
I don't know what to say. You need to get her on the podcast.
I do, but I've asked. If you're listening to this, please go on. But that's the thing, you know, the prime example, she just started something.
Yeah.
You know, very simple. Is anybody around? Does anybody want to come with me? That's how it started. And now, you know, I know that they run out of Palma. They run out in Antibes.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really nice initiative. And like I said, everything has its place. Nobody's like, we're going to go teetotal and we're not going to have fun. Not likely. But you're more likely to have a nice time when you do those things if you are maintaining health.
Yeah.
Mental health.
And I think some crews are obviously huge. You could be on a crew of like 50, 60 people, but still spending time with others is really important, I think, because actually having that time off the vessel and being able to do other activities for your mental health and mental well-being are really important. Because even though you're surrounded by the same people every day and you've got those people around you and they do become your family in a way, it can still be very lonely and isolating. And I get messages all the time from students that just want to have a call. They just want someone to chat to on the phone for 10 minutes and talk about their day, talk about what they've been up to. And it's just nice that they've still got that connection to us and they want to stay in touch.
To call?
Yeah.
I thought that was nobody calls anymore.
Oh, God. I get calls all the time.
Honestly, if I receive another WhatsApp, like, just call me. Like, we can resolve all of this, not in 20 WhatsApps. But then I'm old, so I don't want to write 20 WhatsApps. I generally don't want to be in a WhatsApp group either. I'm not responding in the group. It's just because I just...
overwhelmed with messages.
I just like, you know, meeting up and speaking.
Yeah.
And that's kind of probably a bit bizarre that you're feeling lonely when you're surrounded by people all day. But crew dynamic is a really big thing.
Yeah. I think it's obviously something that I'll never fully understand where I've not worked on board, but it's how can I support crew by what they're telling us and the feedback we're getting. And that's what we're trying to do by working with other companies in the industry. We're not just tackling this by ourselves because we'd never be able to do that. So working really collaboratively with recruitment companies, management companies, people that have influence on crew and can get crew together in a great environment. We've partnered with the Yacht Club in Monaco, which is incredible.
Amazing.
And La Belle Class Academy. So working with them on events for junior crew and senior crew. So getting different groups together and giving them a safe space to be able to open up and talk about issues they may be experiencing and challenges that they're having on board, or even just in finding work for the first time. Like, being a junior crew member and a greenie walking the docks for the first time is terrifying. I've not dock walked, but I went out handing flyers for an event that we did with the Yacht Club. And oh my God, I felt like a dock walker. And there was crew turning around like, I don't want to talk to you. And I'm like, I just got a flyer. Please take it. Like, I don't want work.
Interesting. Well, I'll have that experience. Well, we will have that experience when we go to Monaco. But we'll talk about that in a bit. So specifically to finish off, obviously, you know, Superyacht Laundry is about women and women's safety. Obviously, we've had tragedy again in the industry this year. What's UKSA's, you know, are you looking at it specifically for women a little bit to kind of the support that you're offering?
Yeah, so obviously we try to support everyone equally, but we do have an understanding that there has been problems with safety in the industry. all of our students on a careers course do a whole day of mental health and wellbeing training for seafarers, which is accredited and actually gives people an understanding of spotting the signs of poor mental health on board or just in general, and how to signpost people and access the services of support. And we are there for our crew and our graduates if they don't feel safe, or if even if it's they're unsure and they've got a question or they're worried about someone else, they've got someone that they can contact at UKSA, and we can, if we can't do anything, we can signpost them in the right direction. And it's also encouraging males to look out for their female crew members as well. And I'm not saying things don't happen to males, because they do.
It's not in the same.
It's just not in the same extent. So yeah, it is just making sure that everyone that leaves UKSA has an understanding of what's going on and what to look out for and how to keep crew safe and not be leaving people to go back to the vessels by themselves in an evening, and making sure that people know their limits when drinking. And yeah, it's just creating that culture of looking after each other, and it's not leaving people by themselves to fend for themselves.
Be outspoken. I think that's, you know, one of the things, especially, you know, with female safety on board, although there's tons of outrage at this moment in time, it's kind of, I would probably argue, kind of been the same forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really does need to come from individuals, male individuals on board, you know, if they see bad behaviour and pull each other up.
Speaking of,
there's only so much the women can do, you know. Mm-hmm. They really do need to kind of manage themselves.
Yeah, I think it's looking after yourself, looking after the other females around you, but then speaking up and being confident to speak up if something's not right, which I think is also a big part of the problem, is who do we speak up to? So it's also encouraging our students to know the chain of command on board, but also who to contact if you can't follow that chain of command, because it might be someone senior on board that is causing the problem. So understanding the role of the DPA and also Nautilus and the PYA and that, the support they can access from external services if you can't access that within the community that you're in.
Yeah, it's very important to know, understand, you know, who is supposed to be doing what.
Yeah.
And then also if they aren't, then how you can navigate your way around that.
Yeah.
It's been lovely talking to you, but I wanted to just finish off. So obviously you've been exposed to the world of yachting. What's the craziest thing? Like, this is mad. When was the moment it kind of hit you that, you know, so obviously here is lovely, beautiful, very idyllic, but it's very small. This is not super yacht territory. This is lovely sailing yacht territory. When can you remember that moment? You're like,
100%.
Oh.
So in 2022, once I was promoted to working with the cadets, I knew that I still had so much to learn, and I was determined to go to Monaco. UKSA, as a charity, we don't have a big budget to go to huge events. Luckily now we get hosted by Epperston at the boat show each year, but back then it was I want to go, I'm going to use my holiday as like continual personal development to actually go out, see it for myself and learn. And I was like, I cannot afford tickets to this. So I'm just going to contact everyone I can, contact all of the agents that I want to meet or the management companies, and see if they'll meet me for coffee outside the show. Like, I'm going to do everything I can. And I was extremely lucky to be given tickets by Lucy at Burgess and also Sharon from Bluewater to attend the show, which meant I actually got to see super yachts in person for the first time. I got to go on board my first couple of super yachts, including one that I placed a crew member on, which was Eddie Jordan's Perini Navi, and I'm obsessed. Like, I'm in love with that vessel. It's that again, like I said, that sailing yacht, and but seeing it in like such a bigger scale to what I'm used to at UKSA. And but then even last year at the boat show, seeing the vessels over 100 meters, like,
It's a cruise ship. It's not a yacht. It's a really sleek looking cruise ship.
Yeah.
They're so massive.
And just also like hearing the stories from my students that are out in the industry, like, unheard of. One of my students messaged me last week and said, I think I've broken the charter tip record for UKSA. So I was like, okay, go on. It's going to be like 10 grand. 32,000 euros.
Nice. That's why we do it, people. This is why we spend the time.
So I'm expecting a nice dinner when my student comes back.
You're like, and you can take me to this restaurant.
Yeah, this is why I'm
and
to
you're
go.
Paying.
Yeah.
Yes, well, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's just that's it. Crazy. But
you know, work hard, play hard at the end of the day. Wow, that would...
That's a house deposit.
That's a really nice tip.
Yeah.
Really nice tip. I would love one of those.
Mm. And I'm like, oh, knowing that my students are like a decade younger than me and earning like triple my salary for looking after dogs on board a yacht some days. And I'm like...
It can be the gateway to, an incredible life, but it also comes at a cost and it also has risks. So we laugh about it, but for that individual to get that tip, they've had to
graft.
So, it sounds really nice. And, there are boring days on board, but there is a lot of work and effort that has to go in to get to that point. Lucky them.
Yes.
Result. Yeah. Anyway, I think about what I've achieved today. I managed to get here. That's probably all I've managed to achieve. And I definitely won't be earning 35K.
Yeah, unfortunately not, unless my manager wants to give me a bonus for this, which I wouldn't say no to.
So obviously we are both going to Monaco to finish off, and we are both part of the my initiative.
Yeah.
So why don't we actually roll into that, actually?
Yes.
So for anybody who's watching, there is the crew wellbeing bag. You'll see it. It's going to be plastered all over social media. Why did you want to be involved?
I think it's so important that we do everything we can to support crew wellbeing as a company. And obviously, we've already got a big part of that in what we're doing as an organisation internally and externally with companies to host events and support crew as much as possible and deliver onboard training. But doing it in a collaborative way at one of the most elite shows in the industry, it just gives you so much more visibility and actually allows you to prove a point. And it's what people are doing and want to give back. And also the support we can offer just by doing something like this and actually handing out the bags and meeting the crew and chatting to them about the initiative and the support that's on offer. And all the companies that are collaborating on this, they've all got something different to add. And I think that's really important.
That's the word. So the idea with this crew wellness bag after, so obviously last year, some of you may have seen me sweating it out, walking around, giving out bags. So I wanted to stop drink spiking because there'd been reports the previous year of ladies not having much fun at the Monaco Yacht Show. So I'm like, right, I'm going to do something. So this year, I really wanted to expand it. So why not? I know a whole bunch of great companies that are taking crew wellbeing very seriously. And, a training provider is a big part of that to go along with the right effort. We've got a fabulous group of companies that cover all aspects of your own wellbeing.
Yeah.
Not just mental health. We're talking about physical fitness. Yeah. We're talking about financial health. We're talking about, staying safe, legal health as well. Managed to get Nautilus involved, took time, but we're there, so kind of, I wouldn't say Nautilus is a union, they are legal lawyers. So you've got training, you've got lawyers, you've got physical health, you've got mental health. I don't know what else I can shove in it.
Yeah.
And then I've basically coerced you all into giving free stuff.
Yes. And we're very excited to be taking part in that initiative. We're going to be giving away over £5,000 worth of mental health training to a crew of up to 16.
Wow.
Which we're very excited about. We've been delivering this on board some vessels already, and we've got more bookings coming in for over the winter. But we just think it's so important that crew take mental health training seriously and that crew have the skills to discuss mental health on board and build the skills and the confidence to have those conversations.
Yeah, it's amazing. We love having you part of it. So obviously, like I said, if you are watching, this is the bag. Look out for us. Everybody will be wearing stupid sunnies.
They're not stupid. They are stunning.
So yes, you will see us at the Monaco Yacht Show. Thank you, Lauren, for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Until next time, dear listeners, stay safe and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Charisse.